Hey, it's Bree Bagwell from Only Vans, and 2024 is coming to a close, and we wanted to remind you what's happened this year on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Tom Power spoke to the great Allison Krauss on season 2 of Toy Heart, a podcast about bluegrass.
Can you define what you're looking for when you find a song? Is there anything more than a gut feeling?
It like instantaneously brings pictures. Instantly, it's a movie.
Portland songwriters Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin drop by Basic Folk.
I like the way you talk.
I like the way you talk.
Hey, thanks. It's funny to me that you're in the backyard right now and I'm in the house.
And finally, on my podcast, Only Vans, we welcomed another beloved musical couple, Cody and Shannon Canada.
I wasn't a metalhead. I mean, I listened to a little bit, but I had to like sneak it because my mom thought I was going to worship Satan and drink goat blood or some shit.
Parents still think that, by the way.
Thanks for a great year. And listen to all these and more on the BGS Podcast Network or wherever you get your shows.
Hey, it's Cindy and Lizzie. We're here with some exciting updates. First, we'll tell you why your support means so much to Basic Folk. Then we'll spill the beans about our brand new logo launching this January. Before we get into that, our fundraiser is almost over. We're so close to hitting our goal. Lizzie, tell them more.
Thank you, Cindy. We have been blown away by the amazing support so far. Shout out to Neil from Connecticut, Fip from Nebraska, and Jeffrey from Washington State. Your generosity is incredible. Thanks to you, we're just 3 donations away from reaching our goal. 3 donations! Be one of the 3 people today that we need by making a donation at basicfolk.com.
So why should you support Basic Folk? Because we're all about creating thought-provoking, honest conversations with folk musicians. This show celebrates under-the-radar roots artists, giving them a platform to share their stories, struggles, and inspirations. There's no other space like this, and your support makes it all possible.
Oh my God, exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself, Cindy. All of these contributions cover essential costs like website fees, support staff, and production. We are rich in heart, but we rely on your generosity to keep this mission alive. Right now, we just need 3 more monthly donors to cross that finish line. Are you going to be one of them? Da, 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 da.
Wow, inspo. They say 3 is a magic number.
It is. It's a waltz.
It's also a very fun number. And here's another fun thing. New monthly donors will be the first to get the Basic Folk beanie with our fresh logo, which is launching in January. And these aren't just any beanies. You know, you can walk into L.L. Bean or...
Oh, come on, L.L. Bean.
You can walk into Patagonia and get a beanie. You can't get these beanies in L.L. Bean. These beanies are handmade by my mom and are little works of art. And they're so cute.
These beanies are the cutest little beanie babies, and you're going to want to collect them all.
Ding.
They are the perfect way to show your love for Basic Folk and keep your head warm. Just head to basicfolk.com/donate and sign up as a monthly donor today. It's super easy. For just $5 a month, you will support this show and snag that cozy beanie, and we will not need to ask you for money in the same way the next time around.
Also, strategically, we have placed this monthly donation, $5 a month, to get the Basic Folk beanie. That was how much a beanie baby cost in 1994. $5.
Are we doing like economic archival activism over here?
That's correct. So for the price of 1 beanie baby at the store in 1994 per month, you can get a Basic Folk beanie. And thank you so much for supporting Basic Folk. Let's hit that goal together and keep celebrating the musicians and stories we all love. Donate today at basicfolk.com/donate or the link in the show notes. Bye.
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 Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. It's me. I'm Cindy Howes, and I host this podcast along with my friend Lizzie No, who is here in person. Hi, Lizzie.
Here in person? What are you talking about? I'm in Abingdon, Virginia, Cindy.
Oh.
Don't lie to our listeners.
Live from Abingdon, Virginia. We go to the scene now. Lizzie No is here. Hi, Lizzie.
In the field. Hey, what's up, Cindy?
Thank you for joining us today on Basic Folk. We are talking to Becca Stevens today.
Ooh,
on
baby.
The POWD. Before we get into that, let's talk about the business of things. Have you joined our newsletter? It's a once-a-month email, comes to your inbox, and keeps you updated
on what's happening with Basic Folk, and it is the best and easiest way to stay in touch. You can also follow us on social media at Basic Folk Pod. We are on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. You can also make a contribution if you feel so inclined. We would love it if you throw us a couple bucks so that we can keep operating this adorable folk little podcast. You can find a link in the show notes to contribute, or you can go to basicfolk.com. Also, I will tell you that link in the show notes will get you to the newsletter and social media, as well as how you can make your contribution. Everybody's asking for contributions these days, even the big guys like This American Life is now going on like a membership type of service. So it is hard times out there. If you are so moved to drop us a couple dimes, please do. You know, it really helps us out. We are a small, teeny tiny little operation that's held mostly together by hopes, dreams, and not even duct tape. I would say like painter's tape.
Electrical, yeah, painter's tape.
Yeah, stuff that it's, you know, we're really working hard to keep it all going here. And thanks if you are a contributor. You are so helpful in providing not only the painter's tape, but also the inspiration to keep on going, because it really does mean a lot.
It's true.
Lizzie, you have been all over this world. You have been opening for Dispatch in the United States. You've gone over to European countries and opened for Iron and Wine. Would you please give us a report from the field? What's happening out there in the world?
At the time of this recording, I have just finished a fabulous tour with Dispatch, a band of whom I have been a fan for many, many years, truly since I was a teenager. I used to listen to their CD in my Discman on the bus to school. And it was quite a feat for me to sort of let them know that I was a fan, but not be like too big of a fan. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. nobody wants to come into their dressing room and have someone be like, oh my God, oh my God, I've listened to your song so many thousand times. So I really had to like keep it together until the last night. And then I got very emotional and cried. And I was so grateful to be on tour with those sweet, sweet gentlemen. We had amazing shows. We rocked out. We did a couple songs together. It was great. And now I'm headed over to Europe with Iron and Wine. And that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know what? Like it or not, sometimes your dreams come true. Buckle up. There's no two ways about it.
Watch out.
You know, I listened to these bands and I thought, wouldn't it be so cool to become an indie musician myself? And then here I am doing it. Furthermore, to inspire me even more, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when I was in Cleveland the other day, and it was such a nice experience. First things first, it's a big pyramid in Cleveland. It's kind of like that Bass Pro Shop pyramid in Memphis. It's like mm-hmm. a glass pyramid. But inside is enshrined not fish and game, but rock and roll. And when I walked up, they were blasting Dionne Warwick, because finally she's being inducted this year. And I saw so many great pieces of rock and roll history. I got to see a Howlin' Wolf guitar. I got to see one of Tammy Terrell's performance costumes with a feather boa. And I got to see some contemporary clothing and guitars from like living legends, Illuminati Hotties and Speedy Ortiz, who are pals of mine. And it was like, what? Real living women are being honored in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Maybe we should all aspire to do Rock and Roll Hall of Fame worthy exploits? That's my report.
Sounds like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has done really well administratively. Like, it sounds like they're under new management, getting some new stars in. We love it.
We love it. And anywhere I go, I'm just looking for women. So I'm sure men are also honored in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but I just beeline to Sheryl Crow.
I sent Lizzie a picture the other day, and I was like, are you driving in front of me? Because here were the three indications that it was Lizzie. The license plate says dog bless. There's a sticker underneath it that says dog is God. And then this was the one that really kicked it for me. I Bark at Men was the other sticker.
Oops, I do.
Yeah, whoops.
Hashtag not all men.
Oh my God. Great. Now we're turning into a men's rights podcast. My dream. Like Lizzie said, sometimes those dreams come true.
Not the dream of men having rights. I don't think they're ready for all that responsibility.
Well, I'll tell you what's been going on in Maine. We've been enjoying the foliage for our very first autumn in the 207, as they say. Just wonderful colors. We're recording this in October, and I think like right now we're at the peak of like leaf changing, and it's so gorgeous. This episode is being released in the month of November, which is my favorite month to hike. So I really got to get out there on the trails. Good decision to move to Maine.
I'd love to go on a hike with you.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
I've never been invited, but maybe someday.
Oh.
Maybe someday I'll get the opportunity.
Great. Well, Lizzie and I are supposed to be going on the Keyamo cruise again. So maybe we could find a hike in one of the port places. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be amazing. It would be so fun, but I would be nervous about being left behind.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. We'll be together.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Don't worry
about
it.
We could start a new life in the Caribbean.
Yeah. Our families will come visit us.
Absolutely.
Most likely.
My family would love that.
Okay, our guest today is Becca Stevens. It is so cool that she is joining us on the podcast today.
I am so stoked that Becca agreed to be on the pod. I have been a fan of her work for some time. I came across her via her collaboration with the Attica Quartet, a string group of whom I am a big fan, and some of whom played on my latest album, Halfsies, including Becca's husband. Hey, Nathan. Hi. However, this new album, Maple to Paper, is really different from Becca's previous releases. So if you think you know everything that there is to know about Becca Stevens as a singer-songwriter and arranger and producer, you are wrong. And you are going to be so amazed by this new record. It's completely stripped down. It's just her guitar and her voice. During the pandemic, Becca started like getting inspired to write songs about her family, about her mom, about grief, about becoming a mother, kind of this full spectrum, circle of life, heavy stuff. And she decided to record it in her home in Princeton, New Jersey. The result is a super intimate, super adventurous, bold, and personal album, which is full of amazing performances by Becca Stevens. We also got to talk about some of her notable collaborations. The most interesting one to me was hearing about how she considers the late, great David Crosby a continuous spiritual co-writer. In addition to her friendship with David Crosby, Becca has collaborated with so many incredible musicians, including Jacob Collier, Sufjan Stevens on the Illinois musical. And she has a really unconventional approach to creating pop and jazz and folk infusions in her work. The album is crazy. It's so good. It became an instant classic the minute I heard it. And I'm really excited for you to hear the song, You Should Have Been There For Me, which feels like an old school R&B tune, but arranged for a contemporary folk record.
Okay, let's check it out. We'll do a clip of that song, Should Have Been There For Me, from Becca Stevens' new album, Maple to Paper. And then we'll get to our conversation with Becca Stevens and Lizzie No on Basic Folk.
You should have been there for me. You should have been there for me. You sorry, you should have been there for me. You should have been there for me. But somehow, little mama, you didn't know. Sorrow is the sinker, but anger is easier. You should have done better. Grief is a mountain we kick instead of mountain. mention it, you should have done better. You hurt me bad without even trying. You make it look easy, but the truth is it's all over your head.
Becca Stevens, welcome to Basic Folk. I could not be more excited to be talking with you this morning. Okay, let's start super broad. Do you have a working definition of folk music?
Ooh, good question. The words folk music make me think of history, like heritage, roots. Like, my folk music is different than the next person's folk music. That said, I think in a commercial sense, it tends to be related to storytelling.
Yes.
And music that is driven by storytelling and tends to have like a more front porchy sounding accompaniment.
Okay, I love that. I feel like I'm constantly trying to work towards a better definition as we do the podcast and I interview different people. And that's a really fun like piece of the puzzle, like heritage and the front porch. Mm-hmm. Speaking of heritage, your mom was a singer. Mm-hmm. Did she sing to you around the house? What were her favorite songs to sing to you?
She was a very active performer as well. And so, and so was, and is my dad. And so they were often rehearsing music in the house. And so I was hearing that they were both opera singers, and I heard them like practicing contemporary classical pieces all the time and Appalachian folk music and everything in between. The stuff that I remember her singing to me would be little songs that she was like making up about poopy diapers and stuff like that.
That's so great. And I bet it helped your language development a lot. Don't they say that if you like narrate to a baby or a child, like what you're doing and what they're experiencing, it helps their brain.
Yeah. I'm already starting to see that with, I have two daughters and I'm already starting to see that with my older one, that she'll burst into song about things that she sees around her. And I was reading just yesterday that, at that age, around two and a half, the repetition in music really helps them to remember and learn. And that makes total sense. Like when I think back about the languages that I took through the years, which there were a lot of them, if I even languages that I stuck with for like 4 years, the only thing that I remember are the things that had melody, you know?
Yes. I can so relate. My mom was a Spanish teacher for 30 years and she taught me and all of my friends, and it was always a mnemonic or a song. Like when you talk about, yo, it's got to end in oh, yeah. Oh, yo, yo, oh, like how many years later?
That's amazing.
When did you get into playing guitar? What was your intro to playing guitar?
Yeah, that was through, I mean, I came to guitar through my own curiosity, but the sort of more active participation was through my dad. He noticed me being drawn to it, and he is a multi-instrumentalist and had guitars everywhere. And he sort of figured out a good avenue to pique my interest, and which was at the time Robert Johnson. I was really into Robert Johnson when I was like 11 or 12 years old. And so he pulled right hand finger style, like rhythmic finger style patterns out of typical Robert Johnson sounding songs, and then applied them to like exercises for a 12-year-old on the guitar. So starting out with like dropping the left hand and just doing simple stuff with the right hand, and then adding like a fret here or there, and then, you know, adding until I could play a blues or something.
And did you like practicing early on? And also, did you like learning from your dad? I know that can sometimes be tricky when it's like, this is my dad and I have to like Treat him like a teacher.
I liked practicing guitar. I did mm-hmm. not like practicing piano, mm-hmm. which is an interesting thing for me to think about now as a teacher and as a mom, that different brains are drawn to different things for real reasons and random reasons. Mm-hmm. And you can't always figure out why, but I think it's important to try and find that thing that floats your boat, because that's what's going to pull you through to the finish line, you know? Distinct memories of like being told to sit down at the piano with my piano teacher, and I would flop back over the piano bench, like in an arch, just like flop my head back and cry.
Boneless.
Yeah, exactly. Because I hated it so much. And to this day, I sort of regret not sticking with the piano, because it's such a great mm-hmm. instrument to be able to find your way around on. But I also enjoy writing on the piano, because I have a similar freedom on the piano that I do on the guitar, because I don't have like tricks and crutches and associations and stuff like that.
I think it's so interesting to think about how, like, the way that different instruments can teach us about our brains. I had a similar experience growing up where, like, my parents were like, practice your violin. And I always hated the violin. And then the minute I sat at a harp, that was it. It mm. felt, like, really soothing to do. And the mechanics of it felt way more natural to me. Wow.
That's beautiful.
But what was I going to say? Oh, I was wondering if you could just, like, put a finer point on what you were saying about not really having as much technique or practice or like tricks with the piano. Mm-hmm. Can you say a little bit more about that? Maybe for some listeners who don't play instruments, like what does that feel like when you're writing at the piano now?
Yeah, absolutely. As someone who started writing before I'd ever taken a theory class and now has studied mm-hmm. 2 years of classical guitar and 4 years of, you know, jazz and basic music theory in college at the, you know, I've done my time. I know what I'm doing, but I prefer mm-hmm. with my writing style, most of the time, I prefer to not have that part of the brain turned on, which would look like, you know, sitting down at the piano and knowing the relationship of the chords to each other and what is like things like what is expected to come next or like what's against the rules. Yes. And I won't get into that because it right. would be boring to a lot of people, but
no, but it's like, you don't want to get into solving the math problem too soon.
Right.
You just want to vibe.
Yes. And not everyone feels that way. That's just mm-hmm. for me right now. And I'm everything's temporary for me right now. Coming more from the story and from the instinct and like figuring out the best way for me to serve the story. It has nothing mm-hmm. to do with that right now. I love having those tools and being able to come to them later and figure out what I did and how to like teach them to someone else, you know? Mm-hmm. But I pull the tools out from time to time to help support the process. But I find that guitar is such an incredibly useful instrument for this style of writing, because if I find myself relying too heavily on like shapes that like if I'm just like grabbing the same shapes that I always do in standard tuning, I can just change the tuning and then I don't know where I am anymore. But I also, over the years, have found a way to approach standard tuning as if I'm in an open tuning, just by sort of like focusing more on the music rather than the chords if I feel like it.
Whoa. You keep it melody centric.
Mm. Melody centric, but also like it's like thinking of the guitar as a voice rather than these like chords that chunk mm-hmm. along everything. Yes, melody centric. The voice is a melody, and then the guitar part is its own voice, is its own melody.
I can see that. Aww. As you're describing it.
I have a lot of questions about your new album, Maple to Paper. But first, I want to go back to 2020 when you released the incredible album, Wonder Bloom. In part, it's a tribute to your grandfather. And I'd like to hear a little bit about the story behind his photo being in your studio as you were working on the album. What did sharing those experiences and songs with the world teach you about grief and your ability to connect with strangers over something very personal?
Mm. Wow. What a thoughtful question. Let me see if I have this picture right here.
Oh yeah,
I do. So this was the picture that was on my Wurlitzer when I was,
Oh, it's so good.
Well, thank you. So I never knew him. This picture was taken in 1984 maybe this picture was taken in 83, but he died in 84 and I was born in 84.
Wow.
So we were like revolving doors. But I feel like I know him through my dad and through his siblings. He has five brothers and sisters. And, I really like this picture and I had it up in my, I lived in New York for 20 years and I had it up on my wall for a long time. I have a really beautiful, I don't know if you can see if I can do this. Can you see him there too?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is like
a portrait also?
Mm-hmm. Portrait of him from the beautiful 50s looking like Elvis. Anyway.
Yes. very glam.
Yeah. But, I had this picture in various apartments and one time was visiting his wife, my grandmother, my dad's mom. And she told me this story, and this was around the time that I was like starting to write music for Wonder Bloom. And she told me the story about this photo, which was that, he had just gotten this terminal cancer diagnosis and the doctor was, this is in North Carolina. The doctor's like, so you should probably get your pictures done. Because you're not going to look this good. Cause you know, he would get sick and his hair would start falling out. And so they went and had his photos done and he smiled like this for the camera. And like, I don't know if this is coming through on the,
He's radiant.
And there's like joy there, like real glowing, radiant joy. And I was writing all this mopey, like, I'm trying to understand my feelings music. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to put this picture in a prominent spot in my writing space to remind myself that you can always get there. Like if he could get there, then I can get there. Even if I'm being honest and writing lyrics about struggle and hardship, and there's always a connection between that and a lightness and in that record on Wonder Bloom, finding a way to dance through it was the real trick. So like, even if I had these hard lyrics, I was trying to find a way to dance. Right now, the golden leaves, as you know from Princeton, being a Princeton native, the golden leaves are just like swarming down in the sunlight and it's so beautiful. I kind of want to show
heaven.
You. This is where I wrote all the music for Maple to Paper.
Oh, wow. Them? Yes, it's that's like a really good window view. I love Princeton.
Me too.
Just real quick and no big deal, do you have a spiritual or religious tradition that you identify with now?
I'm a spiritual gal. We sort of were in and out of the church when I was a kid. I sang in the choir at a Lutheran church when I was a teenager and really liked it a lot. I think it was also a way for me to connect with my dad because he was writing a lot of the music and we would go there every week, weekend, and do rehearsals together and stuff like that. And,
that is such a slog. My dad was a choir, like a church choir director. And it
really?
Was like, you're up at dawn on Sunday.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. It's a whole day. Sorry, go on.
So you come from musical parents too. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yes. My dad, especially opera, gospel, jazz, all that stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
And my mom's kind of a rock and roll folky.
And did you say that she played harp too? No, she taught Spanish.
No,
she's you
a,
play harp
she
and
is,
she taught
she's
Spanish.
A Spanish teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
But guess what? She got me to all of the lessons. So she has a big, she has a big role to play in my musical life.
That's carpools are.
It's so important.
A very important part of the picture. Yep. Absolutely.
Sorry. Back to what you were saying about your connection with your dad and your spirit
yes.
life.
Yeah. I grew up with that around like the, mm-hmm. You know, Lutheran church, like singing that music. And, but I would say now, today I'm like a very open book spiritually. I kind of believe in everything and mm-hmm. nothing at the same time. Like I feel connected to my mom in these crunchy little ways. Like whenever I see a butterfly, she used to say she would come back as a butterfly. And so when I see a white butterfly, I'm like, okay, hi. You know, it just feels like these little punctuation points on moments when she's showing that she's around. And, when I was coming out of, when I was in maternity leave for my second daughter, so I had her at the end of mm-hmm. February, I got a call.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I got a call a month after she was born from my friend saying, you know, we're looking for somebody to be the, like a singing role in Illinois. And I like did the audition thinking it wouldn't happen. And I got the part and then like looked up pictures online and the singers are wearing butterfly wings. And I was like, oh, mom. And her dream was to be a singer on Broadway. So it felt like she was orchestrating that or something. I don't know. There's just these little moments where I'm like, do I believe in everything? And then you second guess and you're like, nah, nothing means anything. I mm-hmm. oscillate.
Yes.
But I'm definitely
and also
like,
sort of both can be true.
That's right.
You know, nothing means anything, but things are connected kind of.
You're exactly right. And I do believe somewhere deep in my soul and in my gut, and especially when I'm like in my creative mind, I believe mm-hmm. that everything is connected. Like that I believe that you and I are the same. I believe mm-hmm. that I'm the same as that tree out there and that we all come from the same place and go back to the same place. And that really, I think, plays a role in my songwriting because I think that the music is the same as us too. And that at our best, we're out of the way of something that already exists that we're just lucky to tap into. It's like, it's always been there. It always will be there. And the more we can get out of the way and let it come through us, the better job we're doing as songwriters.
Hey, it's Cindy and Lizzie. This is it. We are down to the wire. The last day to give is December 31st, and we are just 3 donors away from reaching our goal.
Huge thanks to listeners like Neil from Connecticut and Fip from Nebraska. Cool name. You've brought us so close. Now we need your help to just put us over the finish line. Let's do this, guys.
Supporting Basic Folk means supporting honest conversations with folk musicians, sharing their stories, struggles, and inspirations. There's no other space like this. We can't keep going without you.
There is no place like Basic Folk, my beloved Glenda. And this is, and here comes our listeners' chance to give something back to us. When you become a monthly donor, you'll be one of the first to rock our exclusive Basic Folk beanie, which is a fashion iconic statement. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but these beanies are going to be sporting our fresh new logo, which is dropping in January. Mm. The adorable beanies are handmade by Cindy's mom. How sweet is that?
Listen, so sweet. We are asking you like what colors you want on your beanie. And then I send them to her. And she's actually like pretty incredible at mixing colors together.
Of course she is. She's an artist.
She is an artist. Yeah. And these new tags, the new beanie tags. Oh, my gosh. Mwah. It's going to be so great. Time is running out. Go to basicfolk.com/donate to make your gift now. Just $5 a month helps keep Basic Folk alive and thriving.
Bestie, I'm going to hold your hand while I say this. Don't wait. Do not wait. This is your last chance to make a difference this year in the little mighty world of Basic Folk. Please head to basicfolk.com/donate or click the link in the show notes. Either way, it'll get you to the right place. Thanks for the music, and thanks for supporting the stories that we love sharing.
Bye.
Bye.
So you said in a 2019 interview that when writing and performing, it's a common practice for me to close my eyes and remind myself that this is not all about me. Mm-hmm. The more I can get into this headspace when I'm performing, the more connected the performance tends to be. Music is a gift for everyone. It's a language of energy and sounds that are not to be claimed or made self-indulgent or self-serving. Now, how did this shared and utilitarian and very connected concept of music hold true as you created Maple to Paper, which is a very personal, stripped down, and in some ways singular album, like solitary album?
Yeah, it's a really good question because in a lot of ways, this is the most selfish record that I've ever made.
Love that.
Because I had to do it for myself, like as a means of survival. I was so lost and suffering, like, and just in so much pain, but had to be a mom. And, you know, when my mom passed away, my firstborn was 6 months old. And so there was no time for, crawling under a rock for a year, you know, it was just not an option. So I was like, well, you know, I think that the next best way for me to sort of like process this is to just let it come through my art and see what happens. And I wasn't necessarily planning to make a record to share with people. If I put that at the end in my mind, I think it would have shut the whole thing down in the beginning because it was like too scary to think about sharing it. But I say that it was selfish because it was like, it really was about me and my healing and my processing rather than a record where I'm trying to like serve someone else's story or I don't know. But to go into your question about like this concept or philosophy that it's not about us, I definitely had to put that into practice daily over and over and over again to get through it. Because if I was too, it's like spinning plates. It's like a balancing act. Mm-hmm. Like even though I was working with my feelings, if I was too focused on the sort of like, self-obsessed part on the outside of that, of being like, oh, but how are people going to react to hearing about my feelings? And like, what if I'm wrong? Or like, what if these kinds of the critical mind then stepping in and like obsessing about how those are coming through, then it would shut me down and I would have to stop for the rest of the day. So it was more like almost like a spiritual practice of being like, okay, I'm going to go in, like go spelunking into whatever I'm processing today without judgment. And if it gets too heavy, I'll lay down on the floor and cry. And otherwise I'm just going to let the stuff come out and be what it is. You know,
it sounds like you had to set a pretty firm internal boundary within yourself between the creator self and the sort of viewer, editor, maybe business person self. That really resonates with me.
You're speaking my language. If anybody who's ever taken songwriting with me, I teach a class, like a 5-week songwriting course. I keep coming back to this philosophy, I guess you can call it, that has been spoken about by many, many songwriters and poets and creators and spiritual thinkers and whatever. It's nothing new, but this idea of the dance between our open, effortless, free creative mind and then the more critical, controlled editing maybe critic mind. Mm-hmm. And I'm of the belief that the two have to work in harmony in order to make progress and move forward, and that neither are good or bad. They're both very important parts of creating.
Yeah. And it seems like they both have to be present, you know, and healthy for something to come out the way it's supposed to.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have to talk about I'm Not Her. Okay. This song is a banger. I love the video. I absolutely love when folk music really intentionally cuts to the heart of something super contemporary and like technology related. So talk to me about how you're relating to the internet these days and how you're relating to attention and being viewed.
I'm struggling with it. But I also see its usefulness, and I think if I wasn't using it for work, I may have left it a while ago. It's hard to say.
I feel the same way,
you know. but I see that at this stage in my career, I'm not at the luxury yet of being like, okay, bye, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I have somebody who my artist liaison, I will make a plan of, you know, let's post a couple things next week. Maybe we do this and this, and she'll say, okay, send me blurbs and tell me what pictures you want to do. And then she'll go up and execute it for me. Because the second I go on there, I'm like, where did the hour go? Like, it's just this rabbit hole of like, what am I even watching? And how does this algorithm know my weird, like random intricacies so well of like yoga ball fails and like weird, like costume makeup tutorials and like, what, how did you do this to me?
Oh my gosh.
But,
and like interests you didn't know you had, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know I was into like pimple popping videos, but now totally. Apparently I guess I am.
Yeah. Where did that hair come from?
Always a secret hair.
Exactly. I try to think of it as a challenge, in the same way that like, it's a challenge to find an authentic way to keep bringing yourself to the music. It's the same thing with social media and connecting with your fans who care about you and they want to hear what you're up to. It's just a challenge of keeping that authentic and not kind of selling out to this, this like bite-sized clickbait culture of like, oh, what can I do that is, you know, how do I get the clicks? And I don't know, it tends to like lean more in an inauthentic direction. And so I try to avoid that because it doesn't feel good. But yeah, it's like, it's a problematic structure of like showing, the whole like and view structure. It used to not be like that. Like when Instagram first came out, it was this very innocent, like I took a picture and put a filter on it, you know.
I was taking pictures of toast I made and just, here we go. Uh-huh. That was my day.
But sometimes.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just to take it back to the song you brought up. Sometimes, garbage TV, like reality TV and scrolling through Instagram is like a really nice way to unwind and just like veg out if you're needing to do nothing for an hour for some reason. And that was the headspace that I was in when I wrote I'm Not Her. I was like in a dark place. I couldn't bring myself to do anything. I was just so grumpy. And, sometimes I'll do this exercise with students and with myself where I think, okay, what's the one thing that I could be persuaded to do right now without any resistance? And then I name that thing. And then I say, okay, now what's another thing that, I really feel like I could work on? And, I think in that moment it was just, I needed to write a song, but I think also writing a song that like meant something with narrative. Cause at the time I was just like, I can like noodle on the guitar, but no words are coming to me. So I blended this like mundane desire to be horizontal and scroll on Instagram with the feeling that I could be better with telling a story and getting a song finished. And I put those two together and wrote, I'm Not Her.
I think my favorite thing about this album, Maple to Paper, is the way that your voice is recorded, because you've captured such a huge range of textures in your voice, as well as a lot of like quiet open space moments and a lot of breaths. So did you have a vision for how you wanted your voice to sound on this record? And how did you get there in the studio?
Studio. I was sitting right here in this chair, right where you see me right now.
All right here.
My grandfather just took a dive. I had these two, the microphone's not here anymore, but I was sitting right here. You can see me in the mirror.
Doing right now.
Uh-huh.
Luckily we have this. I can put a screenshot.
Okay, good. So that Nick Hard, who made Wonder Bloom with me, he was a very instrumental part of this journey. I started out being like, Nick, I think I'm making a record. I think I'm making it at home. I don't know quite how to do it yet. Can you help me? And we never were in the same place. We did it all over the phone. He's in Spain. So it was this sort of, we used different software for him to sort of beam in and listen to things, or I would just send him recordings of little snippets of takes that I would take on my computer, and then we'd get on the phone and talk about them. But early on, the first big question was, is this really just going to be voice and guitar, or am I going to have layers of guitars, layers of voices? Am I going to have guests? You know, questions like that. And pretty early on, I decided, you know, it's more challenging to me. This may sound backwards, but it's more challenging to me as an artist to simplify than it is to overcomplicate. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go for the challenge, because I think that for this music and for this subject matter, the more stripped down and bare and exposed things can be, the more it's going to serve this objective of like moving through the grief and showing it in an honest way. So I set that goal, and I was like, if it doesn't feel right at any point, it can always be broken, but that's going to be the goal. And then the next big milestone in the recording process was coming up with the like audio technical setup. So
yes,
just to get nerdy for 1 minute, like
let's go all the way in.
A guitar is going to sound better with two mics on it. Like putting one down, you know, near the 12th fret or the sound hole or something, and then one pointing to another place in the guitar, so you get this like bigger stereo feeling. And then the voice is probably going to be executed more perfectly if you do it after you've done the guitar. So you like track the guitar, and then you make it perfect, and then you sing over top of it without playing the guitar. And so I tried some takes like that in the beginning. And I had a little interface that only had two inputs on it. So I was like doing the two on the guitar, and then on the next take, I would do the voice. And then I was like, I have a feeling that even though it won't sound as good, there might be a vibe to me playing and singing at the same time, because it does affect my phrasing. And it also, I feel more like I'm telling the story when I'm doing both. And so I did a couple of those, and I sent it to Nick. And Nick is like super technical. Like he balances me, because he's really technical and I'm very emotional. And I was shocked when he called me back and he was like, we got to do it like that. He was like, it's absolutely, that's, it really serves this and we got to do it like that. And I was so excited when he said that because I was like, I feel the same way. Oh my God. And then it made it harder to execute because I had to get that perfect take and like nail the character and really plug in a very focused way with the narrative. But it simplified everything because I was like, my job is to practice this stuff until it feels right and then come in and perform that character. I'm done. You know?
And that feels so faithful to your definition of folk music, which is like, it is storytelling forward and it sounds like the front porch. Like we should feel like we are in that room with you. And we totally do, really from top to bottom on this album. Cool. It's so exciting to hear. I'm going to listen to it again, knowing this process that you went through.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Can we talk about Should Have Been There For Me? Sure. Especially the music video. The music video for me was very cathartic to watch because it feels like those moments where you're just kind of like fighting something out in your mind and you talk it through in the shower or while you're driving. and it's a very emotive video, an expressive video. Can you describe the Becca who's driving the car and the Becca that's in the back seat playing guitar and singing? Yeah. And who's the you in You Should Have Been There For Me?
I got to give props to Jep Jorba, who directed and came up with the concept for that video. When we first were talking about that video, his first, what's the word? When you send somebody an idea for a video, I'm drawing a blank on the word.
Like a brief?
Sure. Yes. Was four Beccas in the car, all wearing different colored outfits. So like a Becca in yellow, a Becca in blue, a Becca in red, and a Becca in green or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we were like a couple weeks into getting into all the nitty gritty of this video when somebody sent Alanis Morissette's Ironic. Is it Ironic? The one where there's four of her in a car?
I didn't watch a lot of music videos growing up.
Okay.
But it's a great song.
This video was everything in the 90s. And the second he mentioned it, I was like, oh no, we've completely recreated this video, like ripped it off like to a T unintentionally. And so you might notice that there's a moment where I eat a cracker in the backseat of the car in the video. That is a nod to
it's so good.
Ironic. anyway, when we realized this, we were like, okay, we have to pivot. Maybe we don't have to drop the video entirely, but we have to pivot. So we pulled out two Beccas and then we decided that it's Becca that's like, there's like a childlike, it's almost like muse and critic Becca, like Becca that's like sort of maybe a little bit young, like free spirited, younger vibe of like feeling these things, but not on a surface level that's weighing her down in any way because she has the music and she's like off in the clouds dreaming and stuff. And then the Becca driving the car, metaphorically and literally, like the Becca that's like traversing the feelings and dealing with the grief and taking us to the funeral, you know? And my one of the things that I told Jep as he was sort of like interviewing me to come up with ideas for these different videos and stuff was that I didn't ever actually get to go to a funeral of my mom or a proper memorial. We did something, my brothers and sisters and I did something with our kids at an aunt's house, and that was really beautiful, but I still kind of longed for the memorial, like to have an opportunity to like grieve with a huge room of people and like hear stories about her life and hear music and stuff. It's important. And I think it came up in conversation. We were talking about If I Die Before You, because we made a video for that too. But he was really moved by that. And so he added on, he said, what if, he was like, maybe this is a bit too heavy, but what if we realize at the end of the video that you're driving to her funeral? And I was like, yep, that's it. And so that's how the video ends. Spoiler alert.
It's so good. Oh, it's so good. We're about the vibe, not necessarily the plot. People can take some spoilers.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the moments on Maple to Paper where your friendship with David Crosby were most present?
Yeah. Oh, so many times sitting here in this chair that I would be writing and I could hear him, hear his voice saying like, oh, you're such a weirdo, or like, great, great shape, Bex. Like the, you know, like I'm like playing a shape mm-hmm. with my left hand and moving it around the instrument. And cause we used to nerd out about that stuff when we were writing together, mm-hmm. we'd come up with an open tuning and then just kind of explore the open tuning together and find cool shapes that made really beautifully voiced chords and things like that. But you know, the nature of my, I know that he had like, strained friendships from his past, of course, but the nature of yeah. my relationship to him was always very lighthearted and supportive mm-hmm. and loving. Like, I just adored him as a musician and as a person. I didn't really know his music from the era that everybody knows him from, which I always teased him yeah. about. And he admired me, and it was just this like this mutual admiration and love of writing music together and teasing each other. Like, you know, I would tease him about being old and he would tease me about being weird. And, okay. And so there wasn't like with my mom, when she passed, there was a lot of closure and like grief that I needed to work through after she went. And with David, man, I miss him every day and I grieved him hard, but the relationship that I have to him now that he's gone is very similar to the relationship that I had to him when he was alive. So it sort of feels like he's still this celestial writing buddy that, that left gifts in my consciousness. Like he's just not, I just can't hug him, but he's still, the memory of him is still very much here with me, and I can still hear his voice and see his hands and stuff.
Wow. That's beautiful. What are your kids' favorite songs on this album?
I don't play it at home.
Have they heard Rainbow Connection?
My daughter likes Rainbow Connection. She does. I should play that video for her. She hasn't seen it since it came out. So she's at the age now where I think it would really have a big effect on her. But when she sees yeah. like, when she sees anyone singing and playing the guitar, she's like, it's like mama, you know, like she gets what I do, but
oh,
I don't,
yeah.
I don't like put it in her face because I keep that part very separate at home. Like I do it during work mm-hmm. hours. And then when I'm with her, I'm just like, what do you want to do? You know?
Your mom. Okay. Are you willing to do a brief lightning round? Answer quickly.
Yeah.
Don't think too hard.
Okay.
Okay. You just got to the zoo. Which animals are you rushing to see first?
Monkeys.
Same. Okay. Jeans or sweatpants?
Ooh, sweatpants.
Sweet snacks or salty snacks?
Ooh, sweet snacks.
Plane, train, or boat?
Mm. Boat.
Notice I didn't even include cars. We don't need cars. Who is the last artist who blew you away at a live show?
You said not to think about it too much. This isn't the last one, but
that
Hiatus
is a
Coyote.
Thing.
Yeah, is that
oh, yeah.
okay if it's not necessarily the last one?
Incred. What is the coolest thing about being nominated for a Grammy?
Mm.
What's the coolest part?
Yeah. Going there and getting to watch all the other people perform and like celebrate with friends and family.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite color to wear?
Purple.
What is one cosmetic product or like makeup item you cannot live without?
Like if I was going to throw one thing in my fanny pack,
mm-hmm.
which I do
yes.
have this in my fanny pack, it would be like a lip stain type of thing that then once I put on my lips, I like go like this and put it up my cheek and then rub it on my eyelids and then I'm done. Yeah.
Been there. When you forget everything and you just have to use lipstick for kind of everything.
And then you look like your biggest... medieval, like a queen.
A just little bit.
With your like...
What is your biggest pet peeve?
Oof, mouth noises.
It's rough.
It's like strong and finally, misophonia.
It's not good. Do you have any secret talents?
Yeah. I can fold my tongue into three points.
Whoa, wait, can I see?
Isn't this like a common thing? All right, you're going to see it. And now it's going to make mouth sounds, which is going to make me feel... I'm going to mute myself. Okay. Okay, ready?
Y'all, it's incredible. She's made a whole... It's like a cabbage mouth shape. We're ending on a silly note, but I am so blown away by this new record, and I'm so happy that you came by Basic Folk to talk about it, because it's a big folk moment.
Aww,
thank you so much for joining us.
Wait, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
How do you define folk?
For me, folk music is about people, and it's about work. It's a genre of music where authorship and ownership are less important than sharing and singing along. And it's a genre where the process of making music is more important at times than the final sound. And the way that you work and relate to others has to be central. Like, relationships have to be central for it to be folk music.
I love that.
Thanks. I'm also thinking a lot about how, like, folk music has a unique relationship to time. On the one hand, it's really important to be engaged in a long tradition and to feel like you are in conversation with the ancestors, but at the same time, there is an urgency to address what's new and what's happening now. So I'm still thinking that through.
That's a really important piece, and that's something that I often think we don't have the word for that yet, that kind of music.
Not yet.
Maybe you could.
I think of it as just Nina Simone. Are you ancient yet contemporary and welcoming yet challenging? Okay, you might be a folk artist.
Yep. Even though she got pigeonholed into jazz, she was very much a folk artist.
Yes.
Oh, thank you for that. You're awesome.
Kind of like you. Oh, wow. Okay. So good to talk with you. I can't wait for people to hear this episode.
Me too. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time to like really take in the music. That means everything to me. And I'm glad to have this conversation with you today. Here, we'll finish with one more special talent. Are you ready?
Tell me. Basic Folk friends, this has been Becca Stevens. What a legend.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by CJ Nungesser. Our music is composed by Alex Stanton. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. Check us out on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. You can go to our website, BasicFolk.com, or wherever you get podcasts.
Send this episode to somebody in your life who is trying to improve their relationship with the internet or their relationship with their phone.
Sounds like the entire world.
Yeah, well, everyone needs to hear this amazing episode.
Thank you for listening all the way to the end. We love you.
We do.
Bye.